This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Brandon Adamson, and we're going to be talking about the election. So recently, it was Super Tuesday. So Biden is back to being in the lead. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on the current state of this election?
Well, yeah, I mean, Biden totally dominated. I mean, I think it's kind of it's kind of horrifying to me in a way, because like, he's clearly, like, mentally not all there. Like, he's not the same person. And just the fact that, someone like that could win an election so easily when there are so many options, like, it's almost kind of horrifying. I know we talk a lot on this program about how dumb, like, the average person is. And it's like, I think even Anatoly Karlin had an article recently about, like, the stupidity of the average or something like that. How most people couldn't answer like these very simple, you know, math and logic questions. And you just have to wonder. I think that a big part of it, in the case of Biden, is that a lot of these older voters, they remember their image of Biden is from like 20 or 30 years ago when he was like a mega political star. Like, I remember when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was primarily his support. It's like a coalition of African Americans and white boomers.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I remember watching Biden on during the Clarence Thomas hearings and Anita Hill, like back in like 1990 or 91. And, you know, he was a big star back then and very articulate. And even in the early 2000s, he was always like, during the Bush presidency, he was always on like Meet the Press, and then he's always very, this kind of formidable statesman. So I think these older voters have this image of him like that, and they're just not really, they're not watching him, his speeches and things today where he's just like totally incoherent. Like, you know, I've had family members that have had Alzheimer's and dementia and whatnot, and like they, like, I mean, he's like he just gets up and he just speaks like almost complete gibberish. Like,
he very well could get elected. But you made an interesting point: is a lot of people, they blame everything on this kind of a shadowy elite that's pulling the strings. But I mean, a lot of the problems in politics is not, it's not all because of these powerful special interests. A lot of it is just because the average voter is either lower IQ or uninformed, or both.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that a lot of the shadowy stuff comes more into play when it's close. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of, they tip the scales a little bit. You know what I mean? So if like Biden and Bernie were just neck and neck or something, they would find little ways maybe to manipulate it so that Biden would come out on top, or finagling with like delegates and things like that. But when he straight up like dominates in these states, like, that's, in my opinion, that's completely real.
Yeah, what happened is there were all these moderate candidates that Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Bloomberg, they all dropped out, and their votes all went to Biden. But then the thing is, Elizabeth Warren, she's still in, and she's taking a lot of votes from Bernie. So Bernie really should have, he should have gotten those votes, but she's acting as a spoiler. And he's also, Bernie's actually lost a lot of places he won the last election. And part of it is, he did do very well with Latino voters in Nevada and California. and he had a massive Latino outreach. But among white working class voters is he actually did worse with those in a lot of cases. So there's these different congressional districts in Maine, and he lost Maine to Biden. But a lot of it is he's gone in a much further woke direction, and he's lost some of his original working class white voters.
Well, I mean, I think that explains part of it. But and first of all, Bloomberg didn't drop out until after he lost. So he didn't, like, those votes didn't go to Biden. And so Bloomberg dropped out today, like, after he lost. He won American Samoa.
Oh,
he
yeah.
spent $500
yeah.
million dollars and won American Samoa. But getting back to what you said, and I've been hearing this a lot, that, you know, Bernie went into this woke direction, and that's why he lost the white working class. I think that that's part of the story, but really we have to remember that in 2016, it was just him against Hillary. So anyone who didn't like Hillary, like, they just voted for Bernie. It doesn't necessarily mean that they were, like, a strong supporter, or that they, that he was really their preferred candidate, that he would be their preferred candidate when there are other options. So in this race, when there's 20 different people running, Bernie's not the only alternative to one other candidate which people heavily dislike. So a lot of those people are going to go to Biden and these other candidates because they have other options now. So it just means that some of his support from 4 years ago was due to the fact that he was just the only alternative to someone who didn't want to vote for Hillary. So I think that's also part of the equation. It isn't just the fact that, like, he went in this more woke direction or anything like that. I mean, that might explain some of it, but the dynamics of the election itself are completely different than what they were in 2016. So it's like comparing apples and oranges.
And as things are now, it actually does look like Biden is going to get the nomination. And if he does, you're definitely going to see a lot of, you're going to see a lot of angry Bernie supporters, and very well a repeat of the last election, where if Biden's a nomination, a lot of them will stay home or vote third party. And the thing is, on our last podcast about predictions for 2020s, is we predicted that Trump was going to lose. But I think if Biden's a nominee, which it looks like he will be, then a lot of those Bernie supporters will not vote for Biden, and then there is a very good chance Trump could actually win, so we could have been wrong about that prediction.
It's definitely possible. I think that the Biden nomination, I think, is a little bit more uncertain because, and other people have talked about this before, but I've always a concern for me would be that he would get the nomination, and then, because of his mental situation, he would just kind of step down, and suddenly we would be stuck with, like, President Kamala Harris or something, because he would, people say, like, I think Colin Liddell had an article about him, like, naming Hillary as the VP, and then he steps down, and suddenly she's the president. More along the lines of, like, him taking, like, Elizabeth Warren for VP or Kamala Harris or someone like that, and then stepping down at some point, and suddenly we have this other president. So I think there's a whole other interesting issue with regard to Biden's nomination. But I also don't think it's completely over yet, because Biden and Bernie are still pretty close in delegate count, and a lot of those states, even where Biden won, like, Bernie got a lot of delegates in them, so he's, like, really not very far behind, at least only a little bit behind. And so a lot of the states that are coming up are not going to be the Biden will totally dominate. I think, you know, Bernie's going to have an advantage when he gets out to, like, comes to, like, Washington State, Oregon, and all these Western states. And even places like Ohio and Michigan, like, you know, we don't, like, Bernie has a pretty good shot at those. It just depends if he's lost, like, too much momentum, so that, like, Biden just kind of runs the tables now and Bernie's supporters just no longer have the energy and enthusiasm. But just in terms of, like, wait, like, I wouldn't count Bernie out just yet, because there's still a lot of primaries left, and the fact that they're still so close, like, I mean, if Bernie wins a few of these next primaries, like, the momentum can swing back in his direction still.
And it's also important what happens with the superdelegates, because the way the process works is it's not it's not who gets the most votes is automatically in. They can do, right. They can make these kind of shady deals, and the candidates, they transfer superdelegates. Or if there's something, let's say there is something, if Biden's not able to, as you were saying earlier, like he could step down and the VP could take over, but then some, he could also hand over the nomination with using the superdelegates to, like, I don't know, like, say, Warren or Buttigieg.
Yeah, well, it's you know, there's something like that. There's a lot of things that can happen. Like in, like the 1968 Democratic primary was like another kind of complete shit show where Eugene McCarthy got the most delegates, but he didn't end up getting the nomination. And like a big part of that was because Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated. And so they had all of these, you know, he had, was like a, front, who he was just edging out McCarthy and was looked like he was going to win, and so suddenly he was assassinated, and that threw the whole thing into turmoil. And it ended up being brokered, and they gave it to Hubert Humphrey. So we don't really know what can happen with the superdelegates and all of that. But like we talked about before, that I think that's more of where the shadowy stuff comes in. And a disadvantage that Bernie now has is that by the race being so close, like he's much more susceptible to that. In 2016, there were talks that they were going to steal the nomination from Trump at the convention, but they weren't able to do it really because like Trump like dominated in the primary so much, he was so far ahead that they didn't really have a mandate to do that. You know what I mean? If he would have like barely won or something, they're going to be like, well, we're going to give it to this guy instead. But just he completely dominated. Like so, there was no question as to whether. It just wouldn't have been feasible for them to do that because he won by such a gigantic margin. But when it's like neck and neck like this, then that's where they get into these backroom deals. And I don't think Bernie personally is strong. He always comes across as kind of weak, and he's going to get outplayed by these people, outmaneuvered by them, just as he did before Super Tuesday when these candidates dropped out, Buttigieg and, Klobuchar dropped out and endorsed Biden. You know, Bernie didn't have any kind of scheme ready for before Super Tuesday, and he ended up getting, you know, totally outmaneuvered. And he just doesn't have the kind of wits about him to outplay these power brokers.
Do you have any thoughts on Bernie Sanders' supporters, including basically there's the alt left or the dirtbag left, and I don't mean alt left by your website. I mean.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like the Chapo, Chapo. Red Scare. Yeah. And then there's people like, there's Michael Tracy and Amy Therese. They're not really part of the Chapo scene, but they're, I guess you could say the entire group, you just kind of call it the alt left if you want to get simplistic. And then there's the faction of Bernie support that's more woke.
Yeah, well, the thing I consider with those people, like Amy Therese and a lot of the Chapo people, is they like, they always kind of have this kind of like made up view of Bernie as being Bernie, someone who is like, who doesn't care about identity politics much. And it's really all about like uniting the working classes. I don't see any evidence that that's the case because he's, you know, he does more than pay lip service to it. You know, I mean, one of the debates he said, like this entire country is racist from the top down, every institution, you know, he's like, so the language he uses is like, you know, it's as intersectional like feminist as you can get. Like it's more than it's certainly more than Biden and these other people are doing. He's not, you know, this, it's kind of like this, there's zero evidence that Bernie just only cares about class and he doesn't care about, you know, he's not concerned with these, intersectional feminism and all this stuff. Like he is totally on board with like in every bit of it. And if he wasn't, you know, then if he secretly is into something, then it means that he just has no balls to like actually say like any of it is bullshit. That is, I think is just another, illustration of just how weak he really is. Like, I think like, I remember it, one of the debates, like, you know, Warren said to him, said, you know, Bernie, you called me a liar. And he just said, I don't want to get into it. And I'm like, He should have said, like, hell yeah, you are a liar. Like, you know. Like,
yeah, he's extremely, he's extremely weak. And the thing is a lot of dissidents who initially supported Trump are disappointed by Trump. But just imagine how Bernie would be. Bernie is much weaker than Trump as far as his personality types. The same with the conservative establishment sabotaging Trump and co-opting Trump. You're going to have the same thing happen with, if Bernie were to be elected with the establishment
right, people,
of the left,
his supporters
and
Bernie are going to be
far,
disappointed.
Yeah, Bernie is going to be far
weaker.
Be like, so I do think if Bernie were to be elected, you'd see a lot of the same parallels in regards to this like disappointment of initial supporters.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think that it's been interesting to watch because it's kind of like a parallel to what it was like 4 years ago where you see all of these people Red Scare and Chapo and all these types, like kind of projecting all this stuff onto Bernie. And you just know that like when he gets into office and like suddenly he's going to be like, he's not going to be able to implement his agenda and he's going to be do 180s on, over things like under pressure. And you can already see just like how disappointed these people will be because they're kind of the same, they're following the same path that people like us did 4 years ago, and so it's kind of fun to watch it from a like a more detached perspective like that. But at the same time, I don't know if like you know, Bernie may not even get to that point, which is kind of surprising to me.
I noticed on Twitter is people more in our sphere are retweeting and having screenshots of stuff posted by Bernie supporters on the kind of dirtbag left scene. And a lot of them are saying things that would be considered extremely racist or sexist by the standards of the woke sphere. So I don't have the specific quotes on me, but things about...
I've seen it.
Yeah, things about women in regards to other candidates, in regards to Warren, and I think mentioning Kamala Harris, and then also things about black voters that would be considered very racist by the standards of most of the left.
Yeah, in fact, I had a post about one of those because I don't believe that like the stuff people are sharing about the kind of memeing, like I don't believe that sentiment is real, you know, because I've grown up with these kinds of people, like I know them, and they just don't use that kind of language. So I think when like Scott Greer or something posted a guy saying that you can bring it up on and you can see my responses to it. Actually, it should be right at the top of my page.
Yes, the way some of it's worded, it's from...
It's fishy, right?
Yeah, it is fishy. It's from Chapo Trap House's their Reddit. And things about black voters. But the thing is, yeah, you're right. Oh, because these could very well be sock puppet accounts. On the other hand, there's definitely a segment of people who support Bernie and their left-wing economically, but they might be mildly racist. That is a demographic, but I don't think it's a major force. It's a pretty small niche.
Yeah, it's like, it's minuscule. And like, I mean, I was explaining this on Twitter, like someone in that sphere, like, I mean, I've grown up with these people. Like I know how they think. Like, I mean, you're from Los Angeles, you know, you know these people, and they're not like...
It's a different demographic because, well, there's obviously a lot of people of color in L.A., but among white liberals in L.A., they're more from a hipster background, or upper middle class to upper class. There was some article about Chapo, and a lot of them actually are... They're from these small industrial cities in the Midwest. They're not necessarily like Brooklyn hipsters or from L.A. Like, there's going to be a different demographic on the left. Among
yeah,
a lot
they,
of the Bernie
don't
bros
use
from
terms
the Midwest.
Like, you know, they don't use terms like black intelligence, I think, which implies
yeah,
that this
that's
is like,
explicitly,
they use terms
yeah.
like, you know, blacks don't have access to the same educational, you know, the same educational levels or people at a lower educational, they don't use these terms that are like, that are clearly terms you would find like, you know, on the Oons Review or something
oh, yeah.
like that or on Jared Taylor's site. They're not like, they just don't talk that way. And I think that like, you know, and I think that there is kind of like a psyop to kind of meme and project those beliefs onto those people, but it's just not true. It's kind of like when they memed like someone like Jeremy Corbyn into being like an anti-Semite or something. Like it's not like these people are not against Israel because because of the Jews, anti-Semitic. It's because like they're mean to the Palestinians, or they view Israel as like a fascist white supremacist.
Yeah, they
state.
View basically. The thing is like you will get the pro-Israel conservatives saying that leftists are anti-Semitic, but basically the leftist view is that Israel is a white colonial enterprise.
Exactly. So when you see like these irony left people like protesting like AIPAC and these things, it's not out of their concern for like U.S. sovereignty or like white interests or whatever. Like they actually perceive these organizations as like white supremacist, and like Israel is just an extension of like the white supremacist U.S. empire. So it's not like, so when you see, so people kind of pretend and project this kind of overlap where it doesn't really exist. And I think that, you know, it can be fun trolling to project these views onto different groups and people. Like when you post a meme that says like Bloomberg banned sodas because like fat women disgust him or something like that. Like that can be like a fun meme, but you get into trouble when we start like fooling our own side into actually believing that like we've convinced these people of anything, or that these people are like, it's just not real. You know, and I think that in order to move forward, like we have to like at least be aware of reality, like on our own side, like rather than like, we've got to stop projecting our views onto these people like Trump and Yang and Bernie and all these people, like projecting these views onto them that they don't actually hold. Which, if you're just doing it for fun, it's okay. But if you're fooling our own side into thinking that these people actually believe these things, then I think it's detrimental. It's harmful. And it's like unproductive.
What is interesting to look at the black vote and how they strongly rejected Bernie. One thing that I've been heard discussed in regards to socialism, in regards to the sort of racial divide in support for Bernie versus Biden and socialism in general, is the thing is like there's already like a lot of affirmative action job programs and like jobs available for African Americans through the government. There's a lot, and also for college. So there are, I'm not sure this official government policy, but there are more. There are lots of special scholarships for African Americans.
Making the argument that,
and the thing is, and then
that,
so there's that issue for African Americans, and then for white boomers supporting Biden, those are the demographic they're benefiting from Social Security. So as things are now, like there's also a strong Latino component to Bernie's movement, but as far as young whites voting for Bernie, is that's a demographic a lot of them are struggling economically with student loan debt, but they haven't really been able to make, they don't really have as strong of a social safety net as other demographics. So a lot of Bernie's programs would benefit that demographic.
Yeah. And I mean, the older people, they already have Medicare and Social Security. So like getting a lot of those issues are, maybe less important to them, but I think that it's and I have heard people make the argument that, well, blacks already benefit from a lot of affirmative action and social programs and things like that, so Bernie's socialism is just kind of redundant to them. But I think that a lack of Bernie support among blacks, I think is a lot of it, I think, amounts to the fact that they do perceive him as weak, and that he like maybe like not a winner, like just naturally like not a winner. Whereas, you know, Biden has this kind of like charisma about him. So I think that blacks kind of pick up on that, and they think like, especially black women, like you see them like, you know, Bernie is almost like an alien creature. You've seen the way that like,
definitely.
Who's going to vote for that old fool? You know, like it's just kind of like
the one exception with the black voter trend is young black men. A decent amount of young black men support Bernie, but it's the women and the older blacks who reject him.
Yeah, well, I also think that part of that, though, is because Bernie's just like perceived as cooler among young people. So younger blacks, I think, that are maybe more, more involved and whatnot in social circles or something. Like, obviously, like, you know, Bernie's going to, I think, going to appeal much more to them. But I think that in general, I think that it kind of also goes back to what I said at the beginning, is Biden is a much more visible figure historically. And I think that when we talk about, like, the stupidity of the average, regardless of race, really, but the in my experience, like, average, ordinary people, they don't even really vote based on, like, issues or ideology. They just vote for, like, the most famous household name because, like, they think, like, that is the person that is most popular, most recognizable to them. That, I think that's how Trump was able to win, is just because he was one of the most famous people in the world. Whereas if you talk to the average person, like, even, like, people in my family that maybe watch, like, you know, cable news all the time or something, like, you know, if I ask one of my family members or something, you know, what do you think of Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar or one of these people, they would be like, who? Like, I don't know who you're talking about. And you'd be like, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, this person would be like, oh, him. Like, but they don't, like, even though these people watch the news and stuff all the time, they don't know who any of these people are or what they believe. Like, they really don't. They don't watch these debates. Like, a lot of people are saying that, like, Bloomberg, like, self-destructed in the debate. Like, people don't watch these debates. Like, you know, Bloomberg's problem, in my opinion, was that he got into the race way too late. Like, so he wasn't even on the ballot in any of the first few states. So, like, he couldn't gain any momentum from, like, you know, winning New Hampshire or something like that, like, or Iowa. So he those commercials and things that he ran, like, he should have started doing that, like, a year ago, 6 months ago. Like, then he would have been, like, fully, like, in the game. But he got in it so late that it was, like, he just wasn't on people's radar, despite, like, running ads every 2 minutes or something, because they had already, the winners, the front runners had already been established at that point. And when Biden won in South Carolina, where Bloomberg wasn't even on the ballot, like, then suddenly, like, you know, Biden was front and center to everyone. And the average person just votes on, like, votes for the person who's the biggest household name. And they don't know who any of these other people are. Like, they barely know about them. They don't recognize them. They're not like us and just constantly immersed in this shit, like, every single day. Like, they're just not that interested.
And you told me, you at this point, you don't really support any candidate. You're undecided.
Yeah, I mean, not even really just, like, undecided. Like, there's just nobody. There's nobody worth supporting. I mean, like, I would probably vote for Tulsi, but I mean, she's not really a viable. She's not really a viable candidate at this point. So there's nobody. You know, I'll end up voting for someone. I may vote for Bernie. I may vote for Tulsi, but, like, because Arizona's not an open primary, so I have to vote in the Democratic primary because that's what I'm registered. But yeah, I may vote for someone, but I'm not enthusiastic about something. And I've even, like, in the general election, like, you know, I may even consider voting for Trump, but the difference is that, like, I'm not going to, like, advocate for him or invest any energy in going all in, like, the way we did in 2016 with, like, actively promoting a candidate. Like, you know, we got to get this guy. I may vote for Trump still, but there's not going to be, like, and I talked about this on Twitter that, like, you know, almost, like, from now on, I think we've been doing these things, like, backwards, like, you're donating to candidates and promoting them and that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not going to be doing that anymore unless they pay me. You know, like, I want the money up front.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
If I'm going to be like using my social media clout and all of my zillions of websites and these podcasts and anything to promote a candidate, like, I want the money up front. You know, I don't want to, like, donate. Imagine, like, you think of it. People have it backwards, man. They're, like, donating to these candidates and then the candidate, like, constantly using all this energy to promote them. And then the candidate, if they win, they get in office and then they immediately, like, betray all these people. They don't owe them anything. So it's like, dude, like, let's get the money up front. These politicians should be paying us for our advocacy and for our vote. Like, not
the thing about supporting political candidate, it takes away energy from your own endeavors. So all these people, dissidents, should be focusing on building up their own endeavors. It could be political, it could be something cultural, and all the support for a candidate, whether it's Trump or Bernie, it does zap up a lot of that energy.
Yeah, and you know, for too long, I think we've been satisfied with doing these things with the hope that there's going to be some reward if our guy. It's a completely it's a chump's way of doing it, and like we. You know, if we're going to promote these candidates, like I want the money up front. I don't want to wait to see like what you do when you're going to get elected. If you implement a program that benefits me, or if you build a wall or something like that, just I want cash up front. You know,
well, isn't that what Bloomberg has been? That was been his focus of his campaign, paying people.
Yeah, if he would have like, if I could have got in on that soon enough, I definitely would have. But I think. Seeing that actually made me kind of rethink things because here we have over the years, you see these people like investing so much energy in promoting these candidates for free, like just in the hopes that they're going to get something. Like you wouldn't really do that. Like, I mean, that's like if you were going to work at a job and be like, well, you know, maybe if I work hard enough, they'll pay me eventually. Like, I don't want to work on commission only here. You know, I want cash up front if I'm going to be promoting these people. And it might be a cynical way of looking at things, but I think that, you know, we need to stop, like, going to bat for these people who are just going to sell us out or just going to bat for them just on the chance that they might do something. Like, that is just a total chump move, and I think that we've got to get away from that. It's like, okay, but you want my support? You want me to go all in for you? Well, you know, send me a Bitcoin.
Was there some point where you were more enthusiastic about Bernie?
No. I mean, not really, because like, yeah, I've really kind of almost tried to force myself to support him just because, you know, some of his like older positions were okay, and also because of like, you know, when you're disillusioned with what Trump has been doing, you're kind of looking for like, okay, well, who else could I maybe kind of possibly support? But like every time he opens his mouth, like it's all just this like anti-white stuff and the woke stuff. And like every time that you're hoping that he's going to be like, when he's accused of like his campaign being misogyny, so he's totally disavows people and he just kind of like just pathetically grovels. And it's just kind of like, no, I just can't. I can't do it. Like I wanted to like him. I think more for just personal social reasons. You know, it's kind of like when I wrote in my book about how people were like supporting Yang. It kind of gave you a chance to be like, you know, to not be a pariah.
If you're younger, like if you're say anyone under 40, being a Bernie supporter does give you a lot of social capital.
Yeah, it does give you some. Whereas, like, you know, if you support Trump or something, you're immediately like a pariah and like a cast out. So I think that there is an appeal where you like, gee, I really wish I wish I could bring myself to support Bernie, because then if I were to like tell people I support Bernie or that, you know, got like a Bernie shirt on social media or something, like, you know, friends would be like, oh, I guess Brandon's not that bad. He's supporting Bernie, you know. So it does have that kind of social like appeal to it, but it's just like, you know, I just can't do it. I'm too my expectations and my standards for being willing to support someone like Bernie or Yang were like, they're so low, man. Like just like the would just like throw the littlest bone and you just couldn't do it.
It does seem that woke capital, they actually, now they prefer Trump to Bernie, because initially they were opposed to Trump, but they've sort of, they've managed to coexist with Trump and thrive under him. And Blaine Fine, the former CEO of Goldman Sachs, actually flat out said on Twitter that he would support Trump over Bernie.
Yeah, because, they realize now that Trump isn't really a threat to them, like he was perceived to be, like he was memed into appearing as though he would be 4 years ago. And and I think even Trump, didn't he have that statement he made where he said, you know, mega, like Microsoft,
oh,
Amazon,
yeah,
Google, like Apple, like so it was like, it was kind of like almost it was just so ridiculous. Like, but yeah, I think that's what it boils down to, really, for me, is that I just, you know, I like, you know how we are, man. I mean, we love like being involved and like having a candidate to promote and support and be like, and just go all in, like, this is why you should be for this person. Like, you get, but if it's just like, if the person is just not, it's just not there, you know? And I cannot bring myself to do this kind of thing, you know, over and over again. Like, at a certain point, you have to like learn from it that none of these people represent our interests. Like, they, none of them do.
I'm definitely skeptical of what Bernie can get accomplished, because he's going to have he's basically going to have the Republicans and then the neoliberal wing of the Democratic Party opposing him. And he'll just basically have the progressives of the Democrats, which is just too small of a group to get anything accomplished. Do you think that he'll enact any significant policies in regards to woke capital and the big banks and corporations?
No, I don't. Because I think what we would see in a Bernie presidency is we would see like what we had at the beginning of Obama's presidency, which was like, then you remember in 2010, like the Republicans like totally took over Congress, and then they were able to just like totally stymie anything in his agenda. And like, even like Obamacare ended up being like so completely a watered down that it was actually like not an improvement at all over what the system was before. And so I think that you would see that same kind of like that kind of obstruction if Bernie is in there, where you would have, and not only that, but it would be like, I think it would set back the political discourse like another 10 or 20 years, because suddenly you would have this Republican Congress that is just stop socialism.
Yeah, it'll be extremely polarized. So if Trump gets reelected, it will be a continuation of the status quo. And if Bernie's elected, it will be just the Republicans ranting about socialism nonstop, like almost a return to the Tea Party days under Obama,
exactly.
Even worse. And I mean, that would be the one good thing about having Bloomberg as being elected, is Bloomberg is perceived as this establishment kind of middle ground where he's neither left nor right. So that's, Bloomberg is actually the only scenario where you would see, you could see a potential coalition between a dissident left and a dissident right.
I completely agree. And I think that, that is really where, at the end of the day, where Trump has really dropped the ball, because he had the potential where it was like the gears were set in motion for like the Republican Party to transform into more of a nationalist party that was more populist and more geared towards the workers' rights and things like that, and trade, you know, economic nationalism and things like that. And I think also the chance to recapture the anti-war stuff back to the days when the Republicans were more isolationist in terms of their foreign policy and less interventionist, you know, going back to the, you know, pre-World War II and that, and even Eisenhower to some degree. But he squandered all of that, and so there was a chance for there to be a paradigm shift, and that's all been squandered. And now we're back to people talking about socialism and like, oh my gosh, like Bernie said something nice about Cuba 10 years ago. Like, that chance has been completely squandered. I think that's what I resent the most.
As far as Trump's policies, he's not terrible the way George Bush was.
Right.
I'd say Trump is a mediocre president. He's neither great, but he's not terrible either. My issue with Trump is that he squandered a really amazing opportunity that we could have had could have had a party that was maybe like an American version of like Marine Le Pen and the Front National. And pretty,
exactly.
What we got is pretty generic Republican stuff. So that's the issue of Trump. I wouldn't say he's disastrous. It's just we squander such a great opportunity. And I'm pretty much ambivalent about Trump getting reelected. Like, I'll neither celebrate, but I won't be upset either. I'm pretty neutral about whether he gets reelected or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I feel. Like, I think that, I mean, him being reelected is would be more of a symbolic win than anything, but it's kind of like, that's not enough for me to, like, really put myself out there and go to bat, you know, to advocate for the guy. It's just the fact that, like, well, if Trump wins, you know, it's going to really own, it's going to own the libs or whatever. Like, it's just that's just not enough for me to, it might be enough for me to, like, you know, vote for if it's Trump versus Biden or something. I mean, like, you know, come on. But if it's not going to be enough for me to, you know, like we did 4 years ago and these, like, you know, the meme wars and all of that, like, I'm going to be completely detached from that bullshit.
So right now it's either, it's like Bernie, Biden, or Trump. With Trump, it will pretty much be the status quo. More talk, more ranting about socialism, tax cuts for corporations, the usual, more Charlie Kirk is what I predict with Bernie. I think Bernie would end up being very weak. But I think what happened is a lot of these radical kind of woke, like anti-white POCs, they'll use Bernie as a ladder to take power. And you could see sort of hijacking his movement and then kind of a long-term agenda to putting in more, like a much more radically anti-white agenda. And I think you're seeing that, like, with the Squad. And
right.
Bernie would be sidelined, and then those types could and will use that as a ladder to take power.
Well, not only that, but, like, their issues and their talking points are going to come to dominate. And when he puts people like that in his cabinet, those people are going to have power, like maybe even more power than he does, and so that those issues are going to be even more irritating and more front and center. Kind of like, I mean, we saw the effect of Trump's administration when he put all of these, like, Goldman Sachs people in his administration, and also these other politicians like Nikki Haley who had, like, opposed him the whole way. Like, he put all of these people in his administration, and we saw the effect that had, is it meant that, like, those are the kind of policies that we got. And I think when, you know, Bernie puts these people in there from the Squad in his administration and just these kinds of, like, completely insane woke people and, like, you know, transgender, intersectional black women and whatnot, like, it's just going to be, you know, that stuff is just going to be emanating out of, like, the his administration and, like, the State Department or something like that. Just these, like, you know, going to have, like, drag queen story hour and things like that at the White House. Like, it's just kind of, it's just going to be, like, and he's too, you know, he's going to be too weak to stand up to any of these kind of people, of course. So I think with Biden, you're just going to see a more traditional kind of, like,
you say with Biden, you'd predict a continuation of the Obama era.
Yeah. Or even, like, I think Biden would be almost identical to, like, a, you know, like a Hillary Clinton presidency. That's just very, like, I don't know, just kind of generic, almost like neoconservative, maybe neoliberal with a continuation of the intervention. It's kind of like whatever that old quote is, like, you know, in America, no matter, I think it was like Thomas Woods maybe who said, like, no matter who you vote for in America, like, you end up with President John McCain. You know, it's kind of like that's what you get, I think, with Biden, because, I mean, Biden, there's no real difference between someone like,
well, the thing
Biden
is, Biden is very senile, so he's going to have other people. He'll have, like, other people who'll be running the show, so it will matter, like, who he selects as vice president, secretary of state. So who knows? Like, he could have Stacey Abrams for VP, and then Kamala Harris for secretary of state. So you could have some of the same issues with him as well.
I mean, absolutely, but I feel like he will pick people that are more established and just kind of more generic. I think he'll pick a few of, like, these people, like, of the woke crowd, but it's not going to be like these, like, goofy activist types that are, like, you know, that are just, like, all over the place in Bernie's campaign and that would, you know what I mean? It's not even at the kind of people that Biden is going to choose. He'll take some of those kinds of people, but it's going to be, like, he's going to take, like, elder statesmen and just these goofy, like, these goofy career politicians that have been around that are just boring. And it's not going to be like Bernie, where he's going to take, like, I don't know, like transgender Muslims and shit like that. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, there is a difference.
Was saying that she wants her Secretary of Education to be selected by a trans student. Like, the craziest stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what you're going to get with some of these other people. I think, like, Biden is obviously senile, so he's like, if you were going to look at these three different administrations, like Biden, Warren, and Bernie, I think that, you know, Biden would probably have the most, like, boring and normal, like, staff. Then it'd be, you know, almost like someone like George W. Bush, where he's just going to take these old Washington types, mix them in with maybe like a few, you know, a few non-whites, so that he can, you know, say that there's some diversity in there. But it's not going to be anywhere near the kind of clown show that's there. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a good administration ideologically, because if you put in a lot of these like neocons and stuff like that, they're going to want to, you know, bomb Iran and increase sanctions and get involved in all these kind
of
places.
That's, yeah, it was like Biden was part of the Obama administration. A lot of people focus on what George Bush did with Iraq and Afghanistan, and that was obviously terrible. But so under Obama, the whole debacle in Libya, that's what created the whole migrant crisis in Europe. So Biden could very well be more interventionist than Trump has.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think actually also Bernie could end up being more interventionist than Trump is, because he's perceived as kind of like weak or something. Like, a lot of times when you get a president like that, like Jimmy Carter or something, they do things to try to kind of show that they're tough, like, and that they're, so they kind of try to play against type. I think we saw that with, during the Carter administration. So I think you could see that with Bernie. And I think that all of these people are all interventionists. So it's like what you would get with someone like Bernie is you would get an intervention that's like, not that like, oh, so instead of intervening like on behalf of Israel against, you know, this country or that country, what you see is like, you might see like someone like Bernie or Obama, like, intervening in some kind of humanitarian, like in Nigeria or some, you know what, somewhere where like,
yeah, Clinton did that with Kosovo and Somalia. So
exactly,
yeah, I could see
exactly.
Bernie doing stuff like this humanitarian intervention. When the Darfur incident happened, there were a lot of neoliberals saying we should intervene there. So you'll see, yeah, you'll probably see that,
right? And like what was it, like Rwanda, remember, like all of that, like that was like,
yeah, I don't think we intervened in Rwanda.
No, we didn't, but the point is that, like, when I took, like, an art class or whatever, like, this girl gave her presentation on it, and her big thing was, like, it was so horrible, and President Clinton, like, did completely nothing about it, you know? And I had to sit through this presentation while I was thinking, like, yeah, like, it was none of our business. Like, that was, like, the one good thing Clinton did was, like, not get us involved in there. But it shows you how, like, how these people are, you know, they're perfectly willing to do this, get involved in things that aren't our business if they think it's like some kind of like a woke, you know, noble cause or something like that. So and don't you remember that other thing during Obama's administration, which we didn't actually get involved, I don't think, really, but remember the, like, bring back our girls, like when those girls got kidnapped in Nigeria.
Yeah.
You remember, it was just like, it had absolutely nothing to do with it, but like Michelle Obama held the signs to like bring back our girls or something like that. I think that, I don't know if the administration did something or not, but like, I remember thinking at the time, like, you know, this is absolutely none of our concern, like, at all. Like, this is nothing to be focused on. And, but it just shows how, like I said, these people are willing to be.
You see that humanitarian interventionism, it's fused in with neoconservatism on the Republican side, too.
Yeah, well, and on the Democratic side, you have, like, people who want to intervene, like, on behalf of the Palestinians. Like, so it's not like they just don't think.
Oh, I mean, there are a lot of those leftists who would actually support a conflict with Israel on behalf of the Palestinians. And I mean, that's insane, too. My stance on that whole thing is we should just stay out and let them sort it out on their own.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's, you know, my belief is that it really isn't any of our business. And, you know, to the extent it is our business, it's because, like, we've gotten ourselves involved there, and we need to, like, kind of start to extract ourselves out of it, you know. Not that, like, I don't care who wins. Like, I don't really care. Like, it's just, it has nothing to do with us.
So at this point, Well, obviously, excluding Tulsi, who's totally marginalized, there's no real non-interventionist candidate.
No, not really. There really isn't any candidate, I think, who represents anything close to my views, like running in the race, like, you know, nothing. So you're almost down to like who you want to like ironically support. You know, that's like we're voting for Biden to punish like these Bernie people for like buying into all of this woke intersectional shit, you know, like, you know, so it's like you're down to that. And I don't think that's like, that's not really a very healthy way for like a democracy to operate, which I guess just demonstrates like how flawed the entire system is and like just what a shit show it is that like, someone with such neurological decline like Biden could be like completely dominating the race. And it's just kind of like, it's just really like just the whole spectacle has just been completely horrifying to me. Like, especially when you have been like following politics as long as we have. And like, I remember, like watching these old debates between like Eugene McCarthy and Robert F. Kennedy and the Nixon debates and all of these kinds of things. And you just realize that like, that now these people, like they talk at like a kindergarten level, we will unite the country, you know, or it's just like,
yeah,
you know,
just
I've
all
had,
these
I've
really
had gay people,
stupid
I've had gay people
platitudes. That's true with Trump too. I wouldn't say Trump is stupid the way George Bush was. There are speeches. I mean, there is interviews with Trump where he comes across as incredibly articulate. But when he gives these speeches, it's nothing but these really empty platitudes, like "America will never be a socialist country."
Yeah, and I mean, but it's like that. It's like that with all of politics now. It's just kind of like, even if you watch any kind of old news segment, you know, from 30 years ago, or any old debate, like even something like Reagan and Mondale, like it's just the level of discourse now is just, it's so pathetic. Like you have just people debating like who has more gay friends or something like that. I mean, it's just such like, you know, like I had a transgender like woman work for me or something like that. And it's just kind of like, I mean, it's just pathetic. It's like, it's horrifying. And I don't know. I don't really know what else to really say about it or make of it. I would urge people to, you know, to listen to like watch old debates, you know, with Robert F. Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy and all of these political figures from the 70s and 60s.
Eugene McCarthy is he was a progressive, but he was also an immigration restrictionist. I don't know if you knew that.
Well, he started out as like being pro-immigration, but then he regretted it later, and he ended up writing.
Oh,
a
was that
like,
about the Immigration Act of 65?
Yeah, because he was like involved in that, and then like later on he wrote a book called like I think it was like a colony within a nation or something, or not a colony within a nation. I can't remember the name of the book.
It may have been after he ran for president.
Yeah, I think a colony within a nation. I think that is what's his name, Chris Hayes' books, but Eugene McCarthy's book was called like a colony of the world or something like that. So, he eventually like regretted supporting immigration, but he was also like very he was most well known for being opposed to the Vietnam War.
Oh, that's
but,
right.
But being opposed to it like in not like a hippie kind of way, but in more of a statesmanlike way of saying that it's like, you know, it's not our business to be involved over here and whatnot. And he, but specifically that's like not, you know, not really what I'm talking about. It's just, if you go back, just the level of discourse in these, these old debates and things like that, even like watching, Firing Line, like William F. Buckley's old show, like it's just kind of like the level at which these discussions are had is like, it's completely alien compared to what we have, now, both not just on like cable news, which is kind of almost becoming defunct, but anywhere.
People on the dissident right are making fun of Diamond and Silk, their whole thing with Trump at his last rally. But I mean, there's no point in really making fun of them, because that's basically the norm. that's just where we are
right
now.
That's a reflection. It's not something specific to that. And you even see like that on, you know, on some of these like YouTube like kind of debate, like the kill stream and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of related to that, but I think more in terms of like when we have these leaders and statesmen, like they talk like at a kindergarten level. Like,
that's the problem with mass democracy is
you have to appeal to the lowest.
Yeah, you appeal to the lowest common denominator, and that was the problem with the failure of Trump was populism over elite replacement theory. So it was like with Trump, it's like we're going to win over the masses, and then we're going to get in. But they won over the masses; they got the voters. But basically, the same elites were in power. So I think we do like one of the lessons from the political scene of the last election cycle is that we have to kind of do away with this idea of populism winning over the masses and focus on
red pilling the normies.
Yeah, just focus
never
on
gonna happen.
Building up new kind of new elite circles. I think at this point, I'm not really that invested in politics, but I think like building up like new cultural elites, that's really what interests me more.
I completely agree. And I think, I mean, it's tough to say that like politics don't interest me because I mean, here we are talking about the election for an hour, but I think that like in terms of like being invested in it and really believing
I'm not emotionally invested in any candidate. I'm just sort of watching it as an outside, a spectator. And it's interesting commenting on the election, commenting on the candidates. It's just important thing is not to get emotionally invested in any particular one.
Yeah, and to not, you know, not really believe in the system anymore. It's just like the whole thing is such a complete shit show, but I'm interested in talking about it just because it's, you know, there are so many fascinating elements about it to me. But in terms of like, you know, do I believe in it? Do I think any candidate, like there's no candidate that represents our views. And I think that that's kind of like, you know, I don't know. It's depressing kind of that there's just really, even for people like us who love participating in this sort of thing, there's just like there's nothing for us there. Like, so
Brandon Adamson, it's been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having me, Robert.